Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's a podcast hosted by myself, Kyle Scunawill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. We are here at the Earle Sanctum Sanctorum, kind of basking in the glow the morning after watching Fantastic Four First Steps, which we both absolutely loved. That episode is already available, our initial reactions to that movie, available wherever you get your podcasts. We wanted to pre-record an episode for next week, or if you're listening to this, the week you're obviously listening to it, about this article, this interview that Kevin Feige did around the time that Fantastic Four was coming out. The world premiere was happening, and he went through and really kind of gave a little bit of an update on a lot of things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I feel like now's a good time to kind of go through this. And I don't have a crazy plan other than reading some of the quotes here, and I'll just kind of read it and you stop me if you want to react. We can kind of go each thing by each thing. But I'll just say it's been a really, really fun time. This has been a really, really fun time. I think Kevin said a lot of good stuff, paired with us going to Comic-Con, the way Fantastic Four, we think at this point, is going to be a huge hit, how much we loved it. And then, you know, Kevin kind of answers a lot of questions in this interview almost with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder that we're not used to hearing. I think at least some of these quotes can be read that way. So just been a busy season.
Yeah.
I'm excited to go through this. That's it.
Yeah. I think it's a good moment. You know, this came out before Fantastic Four hit theaters, but I'm glad that we're getting to talk about it post Fantastic Four, because I do think this is sort of a nice, where do we go from here moment. Like, we've been sort of gearing up for Fantastic Four in so many ways.
Right.
Not just in terms of the programming, but I just think that really, you know, going back to Deadpool and Wolverine, I think that felt like a really big sort of tentpole moment. And I think, as much as we were excited for Thunderbolts and as much as we loved Thunderbolts, I think we always knew that Fantastic Four was going to be the moment for this year if there was going to be a Marvel moment.
Yeah, and I think we're just now going to start feeling the effects of the slowdown.
Yeah.
Positive and negative. Like, we're about to go into a drought for films for basically a year, which is crazy, before the next movie comes out. But I would say that my read of the last two movies has been that there's becoming a little bit of that buzz again around the Marvel Cinematic Universe that they just didn't have when there was so much content.
Yeah.
So in that way, I think it has felt like a special thing again.
And, you know, like, I think he talks about this some in the interview from the bits that I read, but like Thunderbolts is such a great example of why you need the slowdown, because it's so good and just not enough people saw it. And I think that, you know, if part of what
this has nothing to do with the quality,
right? It's like, if we need to take a year for people to go back and like crave it enough to go watch Thunderbolts, then that's great. Like, I would rather, you know, there's a world where if this were like 2021 or 2022, you put out something like Thunderbolts, it's incredible, but it's like the third Marvel film of the year, and then you move into the next thing, like Fantastic Four, and there's just no, like, it gets totally lost in the conversation. But I kind of like that now that we're past Fantastic Four, yeah, we can take a beat and people can catch up. And, you know, I mean, I think people have even done that with Brave New World. I don't think Brave New World is nearly as good as Thunderbolts. I think pretty much everybody would agree with me there, but it's still kind of nice to see people having the opportunity to go and revisit that and it feel like a Marvel movie moment for folks that didn't catch it in theaters. And so I do think that like both the quality side of the slowdown and just the fact that it gives these projects the opportunity to breathe, like I think there's a lot of good that can come out of that.
Yeah. Okay, so Kevin Feige sat down with someone. I'm going to read this from the Hollywood Reporter, but it's interesting. You kind of found a similar article on Variety. So I don't know if they sat down with one outlet and it just got spread out.
No, I think what happened, the way that the Variety article sort of teased it up, I think it was just basically Kevin sitting with a small group of entertainment journalists.
So people can write their own takes in between. So right. I'm going to kind of skip most of those and just read you his quotes, exactly how he says it. Honestly, I think this will be fun. This is a very important conversation he had. So I'm just going to read it and let's react, okay? So first of all, they talk about Superman. I love how you just jump right into it. Feige enthused of the film, which Gunn directed after he helmed the three Guardians of the Galaxy movies. You don't know who Mr. Terrific is? Tough. You'll figure it out. You don't know what this is? Just go. This is a fully fleshed out world. I haven't seen Superman still, although by the time you're hearing this, I will have seen it, so I can't react a ton to that. There is a little bit of some interesting side note here, a little bit of some interesting James Gunn and Kevin Feige, not drama, because Kevin's still going to these premieres and stuff.
Yeah.
But there's just little things that are starting to become revisionist history here where they're both kind of pushing back on little things.
Yeah.
But he starts with a compliment on Superman.
I do want to just say, we've talked about this in bits and pieces. I will go on the record being a huge fan of the new Superman movie. I'm excited to see it again.
I think I'm gonna like it.
It's everything that I would want a Superman movie to be. It's almost the exact opposite approach that Snyder took with Man of Steel, which I didn't hate either. But I think we'll get into all that. But I do want to say one of the differences to me about James Gunn and Kevin Feige is Feige has always erred on the side of giving other creators credit. For the longest time, people didn't even know who Kevin Feige really was. It was not a name that was known outside of MCU diehard fans. And I think, at some point late in phase two, early phase three, his name became more of a household thing.
Yeah, he's...
But, he was always he wanted to put the directors out front. He wanted to put the actors out front. And I just think the way that Gunn as the, writer / director / co-studio head
has / kind of in every press outlet possible. Yeah,
it's a very different approach. And I'm not actually saying that James Gunn doing it that way is inherently negative or ego driven. I just think
there's a part of it that he needs to get the buzz back.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit because DC has been down. I said this on Discord just so I can set the record straight here. I think two things can totally be true. We live in a society where you want to separate one or the other. I think that Gunn is the perfect person to lead the DC charge. I think that I haven't seen it. I'm assuming Superman is awesome. I totally believe that he has all the instincts correct on how to make a story like that. I think he can be doing all of those things well. I think it's possible to love Superman and it's possible to love Fantastic Four and Thunderbolts. I think all that stuff can be true while also saying it's a little bit weird that he lacks some self-awareness. He has some personality quirks that are a little bit strange to me that I would consider to be a yellow flag on certain things, how much he inserts himself into the discussion.
Yeah.
On some of the things that he now goes, I didn't even know what the phases were at Marvel. Yes, you did. Everyone knows what the phases are. That's very easy to say. Or I just made up the whole background of the Infinity Stones. Okay. Kind of. But that kind of stuff is getting more and more. And I think I prefer the way Kevin handles it. Doesn't mean James is not going to do an unbelievable job. Both things are true. Just some personality things I would maybe tell him, hey, maybe let's take one step back here. Let's let the movie itself do all the talking and a little bit less from the actual director.
Well, yeah, there's a bit of a mythos that builds up around this stuff too, where it's I think Guardians 1 – James Gunn is so associated with that movie that I do think sometimes it, like, people have the impression that that was 100% James Gunn. That
0% the actors or the Marvel Studios
or team. His co-writers.
Yeah, or yeah.
You know, like, and I think that that's not really a fair take on that. And, like, I think you can say that probably about Guardians 2 and 3 and Suicide Squad. Like, the, I mean, obviously there was input from the studios, and but I think that those, you know, by that time he's established, and I do think, like, shepherded those franchises. But I just historically, you know, factually, I don't think that you can look at Guardians 1, which I still think is his best movie, and say that that was, like, just Gunn being Gunn and everything.
Totally let off the chain.
And yeah, like,
I don't even know what the phases are, and I made up the Infinity Stones.
Like, yeah, that. It's just kind of, yeah, I think it's, you're right. Like, it is sort of a revisionist history
there. One thing that Kevin seemed to relish is that this new movie is mostly self-contained regarding Fantastic Four, and it's fully fleshed out world that doesn't require the dreaded word homework. Quote, we didn't want to have the Eternals issue of, like, where were they? Where have they been? How come they didn't help with Thanos? He explained. We wanted them to be apart from our reality so that they didn't have to say, oh, look, they were hiding over there. You know, they talk about the 1960s aesthetic. We don't have to get into that because we talked all about that on the Fantastic Four episode. I do want to talk about this for a second. This issue of homework. I think it's such a strange topic because I'm going to say two things that are true, even though they're opposites. I understand that for the average person, like, for the last 2 years, Marvel has lost some of its not luster. Like, what would you call it? Like, they were the king. Culturally, everybody looked to Marvel, and I would say, like, the Thunderbolts box office kind of proves that's not necessarily the case anymore, that, like, no matter what, it's like Marvel is king. They have to get some of that back. So I do think that some of that shine is gone, and that's partially probably because it became a lot for even the casual fan. We talk about Kyle Cousins all the time, like,
right,
the shows all adding into the movies, it became a lot of a chore to some people. And so I think that is true. And I think that this is probably the way to solve it, is make more movies like Thunderbolts and Eternals. I agree.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. I also just want to say that,
although Thunderbolts is not self-contained really, you know?
No, well, just cause you have to have some of the background knowledge from the characters, but I do think you can watch it and still, like, get what's going on and have a lot of fun and be moved.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think most Marvel movies are that way, you know, like,
I think
that they still try to make it to where you can sit down and watch something, like, even whenever it was the most, like, I'm just thinking back on the phase 4, phase 5 things, like, I think the goal was still, you can just pick it up, you know, like,
yeah, but that's the other side of this, which is, like, I get a little bit sensitive to, I just don't want to go away from too much connectivity. Like, that's where I say that's also weird. Like, I'm weird in that I kind of like the homework. The more that it connects, the more I like it. If I have to go back and watch phase 4, 5, and 6 to then add to something that happens at the end of phase 6, I like that. And that's where it's like, I just, every time I read this, I'm always like, yes, that's right, Kevin, you're right. But deep down, I'm like, dang it. I hope they don't bail too much on it. You've talked me off the ledge a couple times on this, like, what kind of homework, the amount of homework, that all matters. Like, if you have to watch all the projects, that's different. And I think in a way, I think you're right. You've said this to me off air. Like, it's going to become a thing where, like, the homework is more something from phase 6 and that's it. Yeah. And in that case, I think that'll actually be a nice thing that I still think all they've done in phase 4, 5, and 6, I think thus far, is in 10 years, I think you can show your kids the Infinity Saga as a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that really actually hasn't changed. Like, if you wanted to stop at Endgame, you could go, this was my childhood. This is, like, what I experienced, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, it's like the original Star Wars trilogy or
something. And so at some point, outside of knowing that New York was attacked and Thanos snapped everybody away for 5 years, I'm not sure any homework will ever reference anything from those anymore at a certain point. And that's probably okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, and there is precedent for this within the comics where it's like at the time, like in the mid 2000s, Civil War and all of the stuff that came out of this, like, Bendis era around it was so impactful that it was continually referenced and so much kind of spun out of that. But, you know, within like 5 to 10 years, yes, there were references to it. Yes, it happened. But there's no longer, like, they recognize now, like, if you're picking up a comic in 2013, there's a good chance you never went back and read Civil War. So if we need to talk about the fact that there was this battle, here's like a little kind of quick aside, but we're in no way going to treat all of, like, it is cumulative in that it happened, it's continuity, but it's not cumulative from a homework perspective. Like,
sure.
I think that you just can't look at it as a constantly, like a pile that's getting bigger and bigger of stuff that you have to have watched, because, I mean, the Infinity Saga is already the longest, like, franchise cinematic saga that we've ever had in that way.
And now we've almost probably doubled it.
Yeah, and so to use that as some kind of, like, prologue, you know, like, I think like... But that's the other thing, too, though, where the narratives around the stuff that develop, I do think sometimes we look back on the cultural, like Marvel being king, a little bit like I'm not sure that people viewed it, like the average person viewed Marvel as king in the era that we all assume it was king. Like, and what I mean by that is, yes, it made a ton of money at the box office. Yes, the reviews were consistently great, and we love them. But I remember, I mean, even like Thor Ragnarok, I remember having to like convince people, like, no, you got to go see it. Like, it's really good. And they're like, ah, it's a Thor movie. Or like, it's another Marvel movie. It's another, like, oh, what is it going to be? Punch, punch, joke. And it's like, there was always this, like, I just, it's, you know, this has happened in comics for decades. There's, the comics industry is always on the verge of crisis. It's like, oh, this is it. This is the end. Since like the 40s, it's been like, well, the comic, you know, it was nice while it lasted. And I just think that always looks like saying, you know, in the 60s, oh man, it was really great back in the 40s. And then in the 80s, like, oh, great, but in the 60s, right? And now it's like
2000s, 80s, 2020s, 2000s.
Like, I think what happened in so many ways is like, yes, the quality was so good. It was so, like, I'm not undermining any of that. Everything we've always said about the Infinity Saga, I stand by. But I think from a perception standpoint, there's this element of like, they stuck the landing so effectively.
I think it's Endgame that is single-handedly driving it.
Well, and then there was a pandemic, and everybody went back and rewatched all kinds of things. And the Marvel, like, it just happened that, I mean, Marvel finished this massive saga so well in 2019. And then in 2020, like, at the end of 2019, Disney Plus launches. So now almost all of those movies are available for people to watch. And everyone's stuck inside. And I mean, that's like, a lot of people found our podcast during that period. I know a lot of people that had never seen all of those movies that then went back through and watched them. And so I think that, like, coming out of the pandemic, people were, if anything, more invested than they even were in 2019 going into Endgame, because I think you had got a lot of people that were in and then WandaVision. And, but I just say all that now because I think that it's like, I don't know if we were, if they were ever going to be able to keep that, like, extend that particular moment, like the kind of reached its crescendo in like the No Way Home, you know, like that post pandemic, everyone's eyes are still on it. Like, maybe like Eternals, you know, like lost some of that, but I don't know. My point is, I just think that, like, it's easy to look back and say, ah, oh, it's too connected, it's too much homework, it's too whatever. But sometimes I think it's just like,
from the first Iron Man in 2008 through Endgame in 2019, Marvel produced around 50 hours of screen storytelling. In the 6 years since Endgame, the number has jumped to an astounding 102 hours of movies and television, 127 hours if you include animation. Quote, that's too much, Feige says. He characterized the time period after Endgame as an era of experimentation, evolution, and unfortunately, expansion. And while he's proud of the experimentation, he points to WandaVision and Loki as some of the best stories they've ever made. He admits it's the expansion that is certainly what devalued the output. Being high on success also may have pushed Marvel to readily agree to try to deliver more programming at a time when Disney and the rest of Hollywood were engaged in the streaming wars. It was a, quote, it was a big company push, and it doesn't take too much to push us to go. People have been asking for Ms. Marvel for years. Now we can do it? Do it. Oscar Isaac wants to be Moon Knight? Do it, recalled Kevin. So there was a mandate that we were put in the middle of, but we also thought it'd be fun to bring these to life. Marvel has already pulled back the amount of movies and shows it makes. Some years may even only have one movie. Certainly there will be years with only one TV show. Also, Marvel has started, quote, grinding down on budgets, with movies costing up to a third cheaper than films from 2022 or 2023. And I don't know if this is going to be on this article, but with that, by the way, Marvel apparently met with, Gareth Edwards?
Yeah.
From the creator?
Yeah.
To just ask him questions about, like, how he pulled that movie off at the budget he did it
Which
at.
I still never saw.
And it's not, like, the best movie ever, but yeah. It's interesting they're willing to do their homework and just look at, like, you know, how did you do it for a third of the price of us?
Yeah.
You know, what did you do? So if there's any less – so, again, let's just pause there. I think this is all positive. If there's any lessons to be learned, it's that – they're doing their research to how they can make this cheaper, better, and have it be more of a moment with less things just being sprayed out there. I do think it's interesting that he clarified, like, yes, there was a mandate. Like, that's a real thing. At this point, we know that's a thing.
Yeah.
But he also, you know, like, we thought it'd be fun to bring him to life. So it's both things, I think. I'm sure there was a little bit of an excitement of, like, we would love you to make these shows, and that's a mandate. But then also, like, yeah, we could do Ms. Marvel. We could do Moon Knight. This would be awesome, you know.
And those are things that could not have, like, I don't think sustained, like those would not have worked as a film. Like the stories that they were telling there. I think that the further I get from the Disney Plus stuff, I throw that under the bus often as, like, one of the big issues. And it's not the quality of them. Like, I saw someone recently posted, like, all the Rotten Tomatoes scores of the Disney, the Marvel Disney Plus shows, and they're pretty high consistently. Like, it's not that they've been failures. I think that the problem, and even that, like, the experimentation side, I think, is perfect for that. Like, you have these characters that have been introduced on the big screen. It's too risky to try to, like, root a whole movie in unproven characters like that. And it impacts the kind of stories you can tell. Like, Ms. Marvel doesn't need to feel like a big earth-shattering story. It needs to feel kind of cabined. But I think the problem came with, like, for them to get people to watch those shows, they had to trot Kevin out each time to say, like, this is essential. Don't forget, this is essential too. You have to watch this, because Disney wanted everyone to watch it. And eventually that became like a Boy Who Cried Wolf thing. Like, I think it kind of got watered down to where it was like, well, okay, is all this essential? Because at one point they kind of pitched What If as even being, like, an essential thing.
I remember that.
And it was just like, that's where I'm like, I have no problem with them making these shows, because we've talked about how high we are on Moon Knight. But I think that I wish they had kind of carved that out as, like, this is us, like, we're riffing on things, we're experimenting. If you want more, like, spillover from Marvel, like, these are almost like what, like, miniseries are to the comics. Like, it's not, here's a little thing, you don't need to read it to know what's going on fully in the Marvel universe, but it's going to be great. It's going to be, like, well written and well done, and if you like Marvel stuff, you're going to like it. But yeah, like, I think it sort of does a disservice to the shows and the movies in a way, because you do get this thing where, like, I know people that fell off because they were trying to catch up, and then it just got too overwhelming.
That's kind of what this is. The next part is, the massive expansion in television and focus on Disney Plus led to the feeling that watching Marvel was becoming a type of homework. Quote, it's that expansion that I think led people to say, do I have to see all of these? It used to be fun, but now do I have to know everything about all of these? And I think the Marvels hit it hardest, where people were like, okay, I recognize her from a billion-dollar movie, but who are these other two? I guess they were in some TV show. I'll skip it. And he says, this also had an effect on Thunderbolts. Some of them were still feeling the residual effects of the notion of, I guess I have to have seen these other characters or shows to understand who this is. I think if you actually saw the movie, that wouldn't be the case. And we make the movie so that's not the case. But I think we still have to make sure the audience understands that.
Yeah.
Feige is staying put at Marvel is the next thing. Quote, do I want to be making big movies for big audiences in 10 or 15 years from now? Yes, absolutely. That's all I want to do, Feige said. Marvel's a great way to do that for me right now, but I hope to make big movies for lots of people forevermore. I actually think that's a little bit, if that was football terms, like I would have wished he answered that a little more directly. Like when you say right now, that's like saying a team will say, Kirk's our quarterback right now. Well, if you include right now, you're kind of implying like that might change in a year or in 5 weeks or whatever. So I don't love him saying like, and then saying like Marvel's a great way for me to do that kind of also leaves the door open. Like, but so is Star Wars or so is whatever. Just FYI.
Yeah.
So like, I do think he wants to be there, but I don't love that. He isn't like, that doesn't put it to rest to me.
No.
His contract apparently runs out in like 2 years.
I mean, I think that Kevin would, I mean, this is literally his life's work. It is the summation of his, I mean, he started out working for the Donners, like as someone that loved the first Superman movie. You know, it's like he has been around in some capacity for every major Marvel production going back to the first X-Men. Like, I think that if he steps away, he will want to make sure that it's in a way where the legacy is secure. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine him stepping away before Secret Wars for sure. But even after that, like, I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, if he goes and builds a new thing somewhere else, I would be excited to see what he does. And there will maybe be a point where he's told all the stories that he wants to tell within Marvel. And maybe it is good to have someone that has a totally different perspective. But
He addressed Kang a little bit. Feige never mentions Majors by name, instead calling him Kang actor or at one point the actor. Quote, we had started even before what had happened to the actor happened. We had started to realize that Kang wasn't big enough, wasn't Thanos, and that there was only one character that could be that because he was in the comics for decades and decades, referring to Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
I'll say a little bit, by the way, kind of. You also called it Avengers Doomsday before this. So there's a
Kang
little
Dynasty,
bit. This is like, sorry. They called it Kang Dynasty before Avengers Doomsday. Because of the Fox acquisition, we finally had it and it was Dr. Doom. So we had started talking about Dr. Doom even before we had officially pivoted from Kang. And in fact, I had started talking with RDJ about his audacious idea before Ant-Man 3 even came out. It was a long plan that we had to take one of our greatest characters and utilize one of our greatest actors. So this I thought was one of the only paragraphs that I kind of was a little bit like a little eye rolly. I do agree that that's probably true. But absolutely the stuff that happened with Jonathan Majors off the screen played a huge impact in that. Cause I think they would have found some way to still tie those all together. That's the first thing. Second thing is like, I think it's possible that they started realizing Dr. Doom was where they needed to head. But again, you had already called it Avengers Kang Dynasty. So at some point you didn't think that.
But they also had Secret Wars. And I think like from the moment they announced Secret Wars, whether you're talking about the 2015 series or the 80s series, both of them heavily feature Dr. Doom. I mean, the most memorable moments from both of those are that character. So I do think it makes sense that they would have been thinking about that. Like I was always wondering like what on earth, like if you make a Secret Wars movie now without Dr. Doom, all you're doing, like maybe it works and maybe it's great. But then when you have Dr. Doom come in inevitably, now what? Like you've already done some of these big, massive in scope Dr. Doom stories. And you're sort of taking that from that character. So I feel like I was always asking that question. So it makes sense that they were, but yeah, I'm sure there had to be a like,
I guess I wish they thought of that then 2 years earlier.
Well, maybe they did, but it was just kind of percolating and they were still thinking that the Kang piece would be like the first
step,
you know, I mean, cause maybe Kang was going to be something more like play a role more like what, like Ultron played in the Infinity Saga and less Thanos. And you know, maybe they were always going to need like a heavier heavy, but I don't know.
We'll be right back.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Don't expect a live-action Miles Morales anytime soon. Thanks a lot, Sony, it says in parentheses. Quote, Sony has their brilliant, genius, incredible, wow, Spider-Verse animated franchise going. And until that finishes, we've been told, quote, to stay away, says Kevin. So it's a little side note there.
I think that's the right move, by the way.
With me getting excited about hearing the name Morales dropped a couple times in the MCU, in Daredevil specifically. But yeah, I mean, it also makes sense. I mean, that's the one thing Sony has going for it that is really working and people are crazy anticipating.
Yeah.
It would be undercut if all of a sudden Marvel came out with a real live action Miles.
I mean, especially when there's already like we've had three live action Spider-Men show up in an MCU film. We've got Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Like we've got the Spider-Man video games that also have their own version of Miles in them. Like, I think there is as much Spider-Man going on as we can need. And the other thing is, like, I just don't think that anyone could ever do Miles as well as Lord and Miller have done it. Like,
yeah,
it would inevitably just be
not as cool.
Yeah.
They're still working on Blade. Not much to say there.
Did you read about the Sinners Blade connection, by the way?
Yeah, like the costumes.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, basically they were working on some Blade costumes and Ryan Coogler asked if he could use them. They're like, sure, we're not close to a Blade movie, and gave him some of the costumes for that movie. This is kind of the James Gunn thing again. Foggy still likes the flexibility of going into production without the script being totally set. So here's the quote. He and the company like to call this like
the Marvel method.
No, they like to call this working on the script while it's going plussing.
Mm.
So plussing at every turn. I think he means like always being willing to improve it if it's possible. So he says there's plussing happening every day on Avengers Doomsday set right now. And it's amazing to watch because what those filmmakers, those actors, and both the ones that are playing these characters for the first time or second time, or the ones that are playing them for the 10th or 12th time are the best in the world at it and know these characters so well. So if they have an idea, you want to listen to it and you want to adjust to it and you want to improve it. I wouldn't want to change that. That's where I thought a little bit of a chip on the shoulder shots fired a little bit, just because that's kind of in reference to James Gunn recently making a comment that we would never start a movie until the script is totally finished.
Yeah.
It kind of implying that Marvel does do that. And I think that's kind of absurd to imply that too, because I think they've all, like Kevin's saying, we've always had a script. I'd never start a movie until the script is done. But it's also dumb to act like it can't still change and evolve with people that, like RDJ knows Iron Man as good as Kevin does at this point.
Yeah.
So if he has an idea.
Well, and I also think like that's so movie specific and like I would push back on Kevin's statement and Gunn's just in that, like, I mean, Iron Man, the first Iron Man was kind of famous for being so heavily improv'd. And I think that that's what makes it work so well, in part because RDJ was inhabiting that character and doing some writing on the fly, like just from a character acting perspective. And I think without that, you don't have that's sort of a foundational vibe within the MCU. So I don't view that as like I feel like that is being used as some sort of like red flag of like the quality dipping, like, oh, look, you know, like now they're just green lighting things. They don't even have scripts and they're on there just haphazardly making these massive movies. But I think that's, you know, like the Marvel method within the comics that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created was kind of that too. Like the idea is they would like sketch out a story really broadly, and then Jack would draw it, and he would kind of tell the story in that way, and then Lee would come back and he would essentially like fill in dialogue bubbles and add some narration, tie it all together so that it read as one story. But sometimes, you know, it's like you, like Jack draws it this way, and then it's like it could go this way or this way, and Stan makes these connections. But it was kind of an organic process that allowed them to make a ton of comics really quickly and maintain a level of quality, you know, when you have an artist like Jack Kirby that's doing it. And I think that's been Marvel Studios' approach as well. Like when you have filmmakers that you can rely on in that way, and then have like Kevin playing in a, you know, in a different sense, like the Stan Lee role of tying it together. Like that's the, you know, that's the Marvel method.
That's the sauce.
Yeah. It's something that they need to like apologize for or run away from, because that's been there since the beginning.
That's actually the end of that Hollywood Reporter article, but I know from reading other things, there's three more things I want to talk about that he said, okay? So this is going to jump over to Collider for a second regarding Spider-Man Brand New Day. I think there's a promise at the end of No Way Home that for as sad as it is that Peter is forgotten by everyone in his life, this is so important, we are seeing for the first time in the Tom Holland Spider-Man stories him being a proper Spider-Man, him being by himself, dedicated to saving the city and dealing with, for lack of a better term, street-level crime as opposed to world-ending events, which that's just like music to our ears right there. We just said they have to embrace that at this point.
I was going to be so bummed if we got a multiversal Spider-Man movie.
So when you do that, you say, okay, who are the other street level characters that we've never seen him interact with? And of course, I love that the Punisher started in a Spider-Man comic. That great cover, I don't want to say too much, but Destin is doing an amazing job right now in the movie, which starts shooting very soon. And he's got 8 or 9 comic covers on his wall in his art department that he's bringing to life in this movie, which is super cool.
That is really cool. Do we have...
It's just the right call, because the first 3 Spider-Man movies are basically Spider-Man's origin within the MCU, him struggling with his role with like the Avengers, and like what is it like for Spider-Man to live in a world where the Avengers are dealing with a Thanos.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, because of the spell... We do have a chance to go back to like day one, day one install here. If you're a sports guy, like this is like, now we're back to the bread and butter of no money, street level crime, stop some bank robberies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
no, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, I think as we look back, the Spider-Man, the Holland Spider-Man franchise is such a, like a perfect example of doing it right, where if you put yourself back in like 2016, now, you know, it's like, oh, we want Spider-Man that's self-contained and stands on his own and feels more like Spider-Man 2 or whatever. But at the time, we were coming off of 5 Spider-Man movies that were that, you know, like to varying degrees, but they were that. And the MCU was kind of firing on all cylinders, and what people had never had before, that you have all through the Spider-Man comics from day one. I mean, the first ever, the Amazing Spider-Man #1 features the Fantastic Four. You know, like that's the thing. Like it's always been like he's lived in the Marvel universe. And so I think that what we all wanted was, what does it look like when Spider-Man comes into the MCU? And I think having him interact so frequently and, you know, so extensively with Tony and Steve and the rest of the Avengers, like if we didn't get that, it would have been a disappointment and sort of like a wasted opportunity. But now it's like, I love that we got that across 3 films and such a great trilogy, and that they now recognize like we can go back now. Like we've done that, we've done the work, and now we've kind of earned the right to have him set up as his own franchise within this existing universe. Like, I could not be, and man, I love John Bernthal so much, and so much in that role.
And the fact that they're in the new Nolan movie together, and now they're going to be in the new Spider-Man movie together. Yeah. And you know the origin story there? That John Bernthal helped Tom Holland get his role as Spider-Man.
Oh,
because they were on some movie together years ago while Tom Holland was trying to audition for it.
Uh-huh.
And like, John Bernthal like gave him like tips. He said, you should go in and do a flip. And other people thought that was stupid, but apparently Tom Holland, like in his audition video, comes in, like flips in on the way in.
Which is to, also to funny from like Homecoming.
Can, like,
do a flip.
Anyway, so that's a fun partnership.
Is it confirmed that Ruffalo is showing up in Brand New Day?
I it's not talked about in this article, but yes, it is confirmed. I again don't know the context at all because even if Ruffalo shows up, it could be in some really fun ways. Like I'm not saying he needs Ruffalo to carry the movie, but Ruffalo not knowing who Spider-Man is could be a fun thing, you know?
I think what's so – like you're talking about sort of a generational run here. I think what I really love about this particular moment and looking at Brand New Day and what they're trying to do with it, looking at Fantastic Four, like even Thunderbolts, although Thunderbolts is of the three – seems the most aimed at kind of moving the main story forward, which I love. Like that's something we loved about Thunderbolts. But what I kind of love about what I'm hearing about Brand New Day is that it's just a, like, it's just a Spider-Man story within the MCU that's just like, it's not dealing with any one thing, right? Like I think, and we haven't really gotten that since Homecoming, but like Far From Home was dealing with the Endgame fallout first and foremost, and No Way Home was dealing with the new multiverse element. Both of those movies I love, and they handled that really well. But I like that all this movie has to do is just tell a great Spider-Man story, but it also gets to play with these other toys like the Punisher and the Hulk.
Oh, totally.
It just makes me really excited because I have no idea what to expect, but it just feels like I would love to sit. I know we have Doomsday and Secret Wars coming, but whatever all of that looks like I like this feeling that we can just get a Spider-Man movie that isn't being rushed into like the next event.
Yeah, and it's still kind of the right time to be able to do that, I think.
Because even like the end of the Infinity Saga, you know, it started feeling a little bit, again, not in a bad way, but you started feeling this like rising tension, like we're heading towards the finale.
Yeah. I mean, that's the next movie we're going to get. And as we sit here right now, I think I'm okay with that. Like, you saw the post-credits scene of Fantastic Four, First Steps, and I won't spoil that here. But, like, I think it's totally believable that could be happening and Spider-Man just doing a story over here, you know, and just a check-in. And because of Spider-Man, we're going to love it, you know. Two final things, and now this is from Deadline. They kind of tie together. And this is kind of the big closing piece here. With Downey now playing Dr. Doom, are there plans to recast the core Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, etc. on the big screen? Yes and no. Feige sees a star such as Chris Hemsworth as still in his prime to play Thor and even cherishes the return of thespians, like in, as an example, Tim Blake's Nelson Samuel Stern in Brave New World, who played Marvel characters years ago. But yes, in the long term, like many other storied movie franchises, Marvel classic superheroes will get new faces. When exactly? X-Men is where that will happen, promised Feige. In addition, post-Avengers Secret Wars, there is plan to, this is the exact quote, reset singular timelines. And then Deadline says, and reboot the MCU. But I think it's really important that in all these different sources, Kevin goes out of his way to say, I'm not rebooting the MCU. Resetting, he's like clarifying that resetting singular timelines is different than rebooting the MCU.
So resetting singular timelines.
It says, and some of those movies might be rated R when appropriate and when necessary.
Does that mean that he's saying that there will still be multiple timelines that are reset? Or is he saying that they will be consolidated back into a single timeline?
I think it's saying a lot without saying much. Okay, so here's my thing. We don't know. They could still do whatever they want. I have no idea. Our leading theory, I guess, is that Kevin wants to basically, by the end of Secret Wars, literally look at the MCU and essentially, if I had to boil it down, be like, who do I want to continue doing this thing and pull them to whatever is like the main timeline? Like, Yelena is working, so she stays.
Yeah.
Miss Marvel, she stays. But like, even Chris Hemsworth here is a little bit interesting because a lot of us as fans, I think, are feeling like he's kind of winding down.
Yeah.
This seems to lead to like maybe there's a lot more Thor. So maybe he even looks at Thor and goes, he stays. Daredevil, he stays. But maybe there's a handful of people that don't make it, or you pull the Fantastic Four from this other one and they stay or whatever. So there's the option of that happening, in which case I think that could be a resetting in that you're left with like one kind of timeline with all these picked characters, like handpicked characters. But some of the other things, like the old X-Men, got lost by the wayside. And that's what he means when he says X-Men is where it will happen, that's when he's taking old like Magneto and there'll be a young Magneto for us going forward. So I don't read this as like he's recasting Tony Stark right now. I read that as like he is going to recast the X-Men.
Yeah.
The X-Men are going to come into the MCU as different people. I think that's for them. And I even think like with Hugh Jackman, just because of age, that might even be the case.
Yeah.
And he says somewhere in there, I read, it's not this article, but somewhere he said like it is going to be much younger. I do think there will be a time. It might be 30 years from now where Marvel, it won't be Kevin Feige anymore, but Marvel Studios does quote reboot. Like that they just make a new Iron Man movie and start over.
Yeah.
And just because they want to make money. In the same way they're making a Harry Potter series right now.
Yeah.
Like that will happen.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's happening in the next 5 years, 10 years.
No.
And so the reboot that these articles are flippantly throwing out, I don't think is what they're thinking when they say that, or what they're implying to fans.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a picked timeline.
It's a clickbaity thing.
Yeah, too. Exactly. Where some things are rebooted, like X-Men.
Yeah.
But they're not going to start over with Tony Stark. I mean, really, we're talking about Iron Man, Captain America, Black Widow.
Yeah, I mean,
essentially, they're not going to redo Black Widow because they have Yelena. They are essentially redoing Black Widow already. I just think they're going to keep Tony Stark off the table, off the board for a little while.
Yeah.
And you could have another kind of Tony Stark standing.
We've got Riri, who I think has room to do that.
And then Captain America, they're already trying with Anthony Mackie being Sam Wilson being Captain America.
Yeah, I think that's right. And people love those characters so much. And, you know, maybe there's a world where Endgame had been pushed out a couple of years and we had gotten a little bit more time with those characters. But I mean, they played them for almost a decade.
And that's what I think it means by reset singular timelines. Like, we're not going to get Kelsey Grammer's Beast any longer. Like, and that will be, like, that timeline started over. Yeah. Like, it ended.
That's the thing. And that makes sense to me, too. Like, if we were talking 2 or 3 years ago, we wouldn't even be having a conversation about, like, resetting them because no one even viewed those as still on the table anyway. Like,
right. I mean, honestly, could it apply to Tobey Maguire and Andy Garfield?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, we've got...
They're basically Kevin's putting those to bed.
Like
their timelines either just, like, end or... go on infinitely, never to interact again, you know, with us.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's like, to the extent Tom Holland is, like, a reset or recast or reboot, like, that didn't even, like, we had that happen, and then we had the appearance of these old characters, and I think that that's, like, the value of the multiverse saga, is that, like, Kevin, who has been there, like I said, through every era of Marvel film production, even predating the MCU, I think it is a special thing for him to be able to honor those contributions from these actors and filmmakers and kind of have a grand finale. But yeah, of course, like, I mean, even the younger cast X-Men from First Class and Days of Future Past, it wouldn't make sense to start over with that group.
Like, that's why this is so clickbaity and so misleading. Because there are people that are going, oh, he's rebooting. Wow. Like, get ready.
Yeah.
Well, no, like, even I'm thinking now, Deadpool and Wolverine, the very beginning of the movie is Deadpool saying, like, well, I don't want my timeline to die.
Yeah.
Like, why? I'm going to fight against my timeline dying. That's the beauty of the multiverse. We want all these people fighting for their own timelines. That's where we're at. But I think Kevin's saying, after Secret Wars, that will no longer be the case.
Yeah.
We're not going to be worried about Deadpool's timeline.
Right.
That will be reset.
Yeah.
Now, Deadpool is either in ours or he's not.
I think that's right.
That's what he means by resetting it.
And I think that makes sense also because it's just – once you deal with – I mean, I think people understand the multiverse. I think it's been dealt with in various contexts now within the MCU, in DC to some point or to some extent.
Spider-Verse, obviously.
Spider-Verse, Everything Everywhere. Like,
yep.
So people have their heads around it. But I think that right now – people get it. They're maybe a little tired of it, but they get it. I think when you finish it, you've got to finish it. And I think that's what Kevin is saying. Like, you can't leave any dangling threads where you can now still travel from one universe to the other, because it also, like, going all the way back to your initial concerns, like, when you establish those rules, like we have right now, where, okay, yeah, we do have these multiple universes, and that's fun to travel between them, and we know that that's doable, that's good. But if you keep that going forever, eventually nothing means anything. Like, oh, well, it doesn't really matter that Loki died because we have this other Loki that's basically the same Loki that got pulled out.
And if it's not that every other timeline ends, I would be okay with if there's some storytelling way to say goodbye to all of them. Like, if, like, theoretically, I'm not saying this will happen, but you could go back to a world where somehow in the MCU, Tom Holland's waving goodbye to Tobey Maguire, and it's with the knowledge of, this will physically be impossible for us to ever see each other again. But then viewers are left with this idea that Tobey Maguire went on to, like, you know, he's married and he raises kids and his timeline continues. If you're uncomfortable with the idea that Tobey Maguire's timeline ended and, like, it's over for them, then there's a way, I think there is probably a way for them to keep it open. And then theoretically, I'm not saying this would happen, but, like, I think it would be confusing, but I could be okay even in a world where, like, Sony then says, I want to make another Tobey Maguire movie. It's not made by Marvel Studios. Yeah. And you just have to say, like it's never going to interact still. So I could watch it as, like, oh, they made a Spider-Man movie that has, like, in that universe that we said goodbye to. That's fine. And I'm just watching a Spider-Man movie. I'm not saying I want that for confusion's sake, but I can see a world where that could exist.
Yeah.
My point is, it doesn't have to end with every timeline ending except for this one
thing. No, I think that's true. And it doesn't have to end. Like, that could look a variety of ways. I'm wondering here as we're talking about it before we wrap.
Yeah, that was the last thing, basically. Interesting article.
It's confirmed that Sadie Sink is supposed to be in the new Spider-Man as well, right?
You know what? I've seen that a million times that she's in that, but I've also seen her as, like, rumored for the X-Men.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I'm wondering, because it's like, if, like, I think she's been rumored as Jean Grey, which would make sense kind of age-wise with what they would want to do. But that to me would be a really strange, it would be a weird time to introduce a new mutant, like, right before you're about to have a movie with all the original X-Men cast.
I don't think all that stuff's been confirmed. Like, I don't even, like, that's rumored.
Yeah. You know, Fantastic Four, John Malkovich was supposed to be in the movie for the longest time. It was like, who is he going to be? Then we find out he was going to be Red Ghost, and he's not in the movie. Like, he doesn't have any screen time. So I think that is right. Like, we shouldn't read too much into it. I am wondering, like,
yeah, if she's a mutant in an X-Men, just wait one more year.
Yeah.
Till after this settles, and then do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's cleaner, because it's,
just think it's so the way to go to, because if you're going to have the Avengers essentially be finished as Avengers, that's when I think the door opens for X-Men and mutants.
Yeah. I also am just like, part of the reason I'm asking that is because I look at the MCU as it currently stands, and this has nothing to do with, like, the quality of it or my investment in certain characters. I'm just thinking, like, okay, after Secret Wars, like, we know we have these plans for new X-Men. Like, I'm thinking, like, what is it? Like, I you know, there are threads, like, will want a new Black Panther. They've set that up. Like,
yeah, good point. A third Doctor Strange potentially.
Yeah. And like
fifth Thor potentially.
But like, are we going to wind up with a, like, if we bring the Fantastic Four over into our universe, that's now a new super team in the 616. And then we start with the X-Men. And I'm just wondering, like, what the strategy will be for making that feel meaningful and fresh, like, because I think that's what would make sense. Like, you have the like, Secret Wars is such an ending point, and then you start with the comic, the property that is arguably the biggest that Marvel's had, like only second only to Spider-Man, like X-Men have always been way bigger than the Avengers in terms of like notoriety and certainly like money-making potential. But like, what is that?
Well, and I don't think they'll do this, but this is where I also say, just what I said, Tobey Maguire applies. I think they're going to end up with everyone in one timeline, but could it also be a thing where they ask viewers to invest into two and they still keep it separate? That you get introduced to a bunch of new X-Men in Secret Wars, but it doesn't end with just one timeline. It says you say goodbye to Toby, but like the Avengers say goodbye to the X-Men.
Yeah.
And for the next 5 years, there are parallel things going on that don't ever interact. There's X-Men movies that Marvel Studios are making. And in that way, that would also reset timelines. Like, they wouldn't be, and then they would just totally drop any kind of like mutant talk in.
Yeah, whatever this other that's the other weird thing is they've already kind of started planting those seeds.
We think that it's going to come together. However, we've for years felt like they mostly operate better separately. It would be insanely bold, but I think kind of cool if somehow he pulled off an investment in both, but they weren't the same thing.
I still like, I think my secret hope, and I think there will be a lot of issues with this, and I don't think that they'll do it. But again, after seeing Fantastic Four, I told you yesterday, like seeing Spider-Man swing around like 60s Manhattan would feel so satisfying to me. Introducing the X-Men in the 60s as like the children of the Atom into a world where like the only superheroes are the Fantastic Four.
Rob is getting excited over here.
Like I there's something about those early Marvel years in the comics where you need people to be like in the MCU. If mutants suddenly pop up, is that really that shocking for like the average resident of the 616 universe? Like they have now seen, I mean, like they know about like sorcerers and space gods, and they've seen like they've all been snapped out of existence and back, and like
but
who knows
they
what they
know
will see.
A guy that looks like a frog or a lizard.
That's true.
They've never seen that.
Yeah, they don't know a porcupine guy yet.
That's so true. He can hug you.
I just think like if you know, like Marvel's actually the comic that you and I are reading to kind of kick off our Marvel Comics 101 discussion on Friends from Work Plus handles this really, really well, where it intentionally sets itself in the time period when Stan and Jack were writing these comics, but it also like deals with the way that people view mutants so differently from the way they view like the Fantastic Four and Captain America. And there still aren't that many out there, but they're like, these people, we know how they got their powers. They're humans, they're heroes, but these mutants are just like, they're fundamentally different from us. They're popping up. There are so many of them. Do they hate us? Do they want to destroy us? And I'm just wondering, like, in a world that is so filled with super people and villains already, like, it would just be so fresh to, like, if we could migrate some people into the Fantastic Four universe. It won't happen. There are too many dangling threads. But, like, I think that that would solve a lot of issues, and it would still technically preserve continuity.
In the last 2 weeks, we've spent literally over an hour already talking about where is Secret War is going to go. And we have 2 years before that happens. So we got a lot of time to figure that out. But I think these are the discussions we're going to be having for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And every little month we get closer will be a tiny little glimpse into maybe a little more clarity at that. Obviously, once you see Doomsday, you'll know a ton more. I'll close it by saying Spider-Man Brand New Day releases July 31 of next year. So a year exactly from today when you're listening to this.
Wow.
Avengers Doomsday is December 18, 2026. So my understanding is we're only going to get Daredevil Born Again Season 2.
When is that?
That's March.
Okay.
They finished filming. It's supposed to be unbelievable by all accounts. I saw Wilson Bethel, is his name?
Oh, yeah.
Just being like,
Bullseye.
Smile as big as you can possibly on his face, being like, it's the coolest thing we've ever done.
Do you know, is John Bernthal supposed to be in season two, or is he just doing the special?
I don't know. He is doing the special. We're going to get that special presentation. There are going to be animated shows, but they don't tie in. Mm-hmm. So there'll be animated shows. Doomsday, December 18, 2026. So Brand New Day and Doomsday, the only two movies in 2026. There's an as of right now, if nothing changes, and some of this could shift, there's an untitled Marvel movie July 23, 2027, with Secret Wars being December 2027. So it's the exact same release schedule, July, December, July, December.
Okay.
Then as of right now, and this, I'm almost positive will not stay, they have four movies in 2028. They have confirmed dates for February 18, May 5, November 10, and December 15. That's after Secret Wars. So the total opposite approach of Endgame.
Yeah.
Of like, and Kevin said that in this article. He said, Endgame was very clearly we were ending something. Secret Wars is very clearly the beginning of stuff. That was like a big headline for this.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Which I think is true.
Yeah.
But that's proof in that they're going to throw out four movies as of now, even if one of those gets delayed, three movies as of now in 2028, right afterward.
I mean,
we're talking December to February.
Yeah.
That to me would make more sense with whatever you left with like the X-Men, that February one is an X-Men movie to get people like going on that or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, Black Panther 3, Doctor Strange 3, Thor 5, a new X-Men movie, maybe a Spider-Man follow-up, maybe a Fantastic Four sequel is what people have talked about, depending on how well that does.
Yeah.
What happens with the Thunderbolts or New Avengers? Is there like a small level Avengers movie that happens? Avengers movie. Yeah. I don't know.
Dude, that is like an interesting thing to looking at it. Like the space between sequels has gotten so like expansive. Like other than the Spider-Man stuff, which I think is in part because of the Sony connection, like those have come out like clockwork, basically every 2 years until now with the space between No Way Home and Brand New Day. But like, you know, we talked about how there was like a huge gap between Doctor Strange and Doctor Strange 2. There was a like still sizable gap. I mean, 2017 for Ragnarok and 2022 for Love and Thunder. Like it used to be, you know, you look back at phase one, phase two, it was basically like,
it's partially because you're getting some follow-up in other event movies in between.
Yeah, but I think it would be, it's weird for me to think like, oh, we would already have like a Fantastic Four sequel in 2028, but it's really not that crazy. I mean,
that's
like
3 years.
We had like Winter Soldier was 2014, Civil War was 2016, you know, like.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I think that
Iron Man 2 was 2010?
Yeah, right.
Less than 2 years maybe?
I think so, right, like a little bit less than 2 years. And then
totally different era, you know, they were trying to kick something off there. But again, to this point, maybe they are trying to kick stuff off now after Secret Wars.
Yeah, that's a really great place to end the episode. I'm so curious to see what Feige means by that, by Secret Wars being a beginning, and where that leaves us. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited about everything that we,
I think it's mostly all good news.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. We'll see you back here next time on Friends from Work.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.